It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
Start on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
His house, the three and the lead, you betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner,
P.J. Tucker.
Gordon by Goldridge.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
Houston Rockets basketball is back. We finally have some Rockets basketball to talk about, even though it's a scrimmage. Doesn't matter. It is Rockets basketball. What's up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can catch me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, and of course, you can also find our show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And if you appreciate what we do here at Locked On Rockets, do me a huge favor. Drop us a review, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Leave us some stars, share the podcast on social media. I would sincerely appreciate it. Few takeaways from tonight's scrimmage. So let's get the bad news out of the way first. It was ultimately a loss, 94-83. The Rockets do fall to the Raptors, but that doesn't matter. And here's why it doesn't matter. It's a scrimmage game. Who cares if you won or lost? None of that matters. What matters is what actually took place in the game. We need to look at this as if it were a preseason game. And that's kind of the main takeaway is, you know, when you're looking at preseason games before the NBA season starts, you're not necessarily looking at the final score, whether it's a win or a loss. Yes, what goes on in those games contributes to a win or a loss. If you're playing really poorly, obviously you're probably going to lose more often than not. That being said, I think there's still a lot of good to take out of this game. There was definitely some problem areas, namely the transition defense, I felt like was still a big trouble spot for this team. And at times, with certain groups of guys out there on the floor, there were some defensive breakdowns and miscommunications that didn't look so great. That being said, main takeaways are the key guys, the guys that this team is really going to rely on down the stretch. Russell Westbrook, James Harden, PJ Tucker, and Robert Covington. Those four guys looked phenomenal. Like, those four guys looked great the entire evening. PJ Tucker, 3 of 7 from downtown. Robert Covington, 2 of 3 from downtown. Harden and Westbrook both had pretty solid nights offensively. Westbrook a little bit less efficient than we'd like him to be, but he only played one half. He also is the guy who just came back from COVID and also didn't, I mean, he's only practiced twice, right? So I'm not going to hold it against Westbrook that this is his first, you know, scrimmage, and he hasn't gotten nearly as much practice time in as all the other guys have. So, you know, and he attempted 3 3-pointers in this game. One of them was a heave at the end of a quarter. So I'm really not going to hold that against him. But overall, those four guys had really strong games. And in addition to that, Daniel House Jr., who actually came off the bench with Eric Gordon starting this scrimmage in place of Daniel House Jr., Daniel House Jr. had a phenomenal game off the bench. He had 18 points, 7 of 11 shooting, 6 rebounds, had an assist, just 1 turnover, a couple steals. You know, overall, really, really strong game from Daniel House Jr. Had some really great defense at times, some great help defense in certain areas throughout the game. But the main area that I want to talk about first, just right off the top, is the ball movement. And that's the thing that I think a lot of people noticed, and it just felt entirely different, is that each play down the court, one, it felt like the team was trying to get into their offense quicker. And I don't think this is like recency bias, just because this is the first official Rockets basketball, you know, fresh Rockets basketball that we've seen in 4 months. But, you know, I've poured myself over, you know, rewatching games and, you know, highlight reels and all this stuff. And it's throughout this entire past season, it's never felt like the offense was getting into its sets this quickly. And past that, it was the ball movement specifically on the offensive side that was so encouraging. Is even though the team ultimately lost the game, and even though they only shot 14 of 48 from downtown for 29%, largely a lot of those threes were wide open. and they were generating some really good looks, but it wasn't just the old, you know, okay, Harden's going to ISO or Westbrook's going to ISO and either they're going to score and generate a look. No, there was a lot of really crisp, clean passes being made, a lot of dribble penetration and then kicking back out to an open three-pointer, and an area that I've harped on quite a bit, and I think I harped on this recently, in fact, was the fact that offensively, sometimes this team has this issue where after the initial penetration by, you know, Harden or Westbrook or Gordon or whoever, they like to just reset rather than keeping the defense scrambling and you know, continuing to pass the ball around the perimeter and find another person to attack the basket. They like to sometimes reset and just try and find one of James or Russ to kick the ball back to, and then they reset with, you know, 10 to 14 seconds on the shot clock. That's not necessarily bad, but then you're allowing the defense a chance to get set back up when you do that. So there were a lot of times in this game where it felt like the offense never stopped, where the ball just kept moving, where, yeah, there'd be the initial dribble penetration, then a kick out to a three, the three's not there, so then it rotates, you know, the ball gets swung around the perimeter, and then eventually it gets to somebody else who pump fakes the three and then continues to drive it in even further. And these plays didn't result in a made basket every single time, but they did result in really great shot selection. They resulted in wide open attempts. And even though the Rockets didn't convert on all those attempts, generating wide open shots is what this offense is geared to do. With the likes of Russell Westbrook and James Harden consistently breaking down the defense, they're either going to get shots for themselves or other players. And it's just important that this team needs to either A, take the shots when they're there, the first time that the kickout happens, or B, continue to keep the defense scrambling so that they can generate another high quality, high percentage look for somebody else if it's not quite there off the initial kickout. And I saw a lot of that in this game, and that's largely encouraging, just, you know, especially coming for a team that has to shoot threes, that makes this such a big part of their game on a nightly basis. Seeing them generate wide open looks is encouraging, especially against a team like the Toronto Raptors, who were the second best defensive team with a defensive rating of like 104.9 throughout the regular season before the hiatus kicked in. So they're not, you know, they're no slouch on the defensive side of the ball. They're a very talented team. They're a well-coached team. They have really sound defensive principles. And to see this team produce, you know, to have a pretty solid evening. Again, you missed a handful of shots. You know, Eric Gordon had a kind of a subpar game shooting the ball. I'm not going to hold it against him. Ben McLemore, 1 of 7 from downtown, had a really terrible night from behind the arc, and he has been the best shooting Rocket all season to this point. So I'm not going to fault them for that. Also, a big part of all those misses, Chris Clemens was 0-5 from downtown, basically in garbage time, as these were 10 minute quarters throughout the scrimmage. So just a total of 40 minutes of basketball played instead of 48 minutes played. And Clemens played the entire final 10 minutes and didn't hit a single three. James Harden also didn't play the final 10 minutes. Westbrook didn't play the final half of basketball. So for anybody that's freaking out about this as a loss, we need to just take a step back and realize this was a scrimmage. This was just a tune-up game, and this was just a way for Mike D'Antoni to get a look at his team against another NBA caliber team that wasn't a 5-on-5 scrimmage. He was able to play around with rotations a little bit, and he didn't even get to play around fully with rotations because Austin Rivers is not currently in the NBA bubble, as he had to leave due to a family emergency. Damari Carroll was unable to play as he tweaked his hamstring earlier in the week, so he had some limitations on the roster, as well as Russell Westbrook only playing one half of basketball. So all that being said, I'm pleased with how this evening went, and there's a few more topics that I want to hit on, and we'll get more on those in just one moment. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, discussing the Rockets' very first scrimmage of three scrimmages, the next two scrimmages being against the Memphis Grizzlies on Sunday, and then lastly the Boston Celtics on Tuesday, ahead of the NBA restart. Now, it's not necessarily backtracking, but, you know, I kept things a little broad in that first segment, and I really want to hone in on Russell Westbrook and James Harden momentarily, and then I want to focus on Robert Covington's defense for this segment. So, first things first, Russ did not look like a guy who recently recovered from COVID-19. I mean, he was out there like a blur, just getting to his spots at will, getting to the areas of the court that he is most comfortable in. Yes, he did take a couple three-pointers this game. Again, he took three technically, but one was at the end of a quarter, and I'm not going to fault him for, you know, taking a heave at the end of a quarter. You know, largely he was able to, you know, get inside, get into the mid-range area, as well as kind of, you know, use his size against some of the smaller Toronto guards occasionally, really work his way into the rim. There were a couple bunnies that he missed, like, directly at the rim. But overall, really pleased with how in shape he looks, how explosive he looks. And that's a concern, right? When you look at a guy who, like Russell Westbrook, relies so much on his athleticism, so much on, you know, I don't want to say it's not that he's not skilled. Russell Westbrook is a phenomenally skilled ball player, but there are some players that rely a bit more on that, their athleticism, and a bit less on skill. And then there's other players that rely a bit more on skill versus their athleticism. And I think James Harden and Russell Westbrook are a perfect example of those two types of players. So yes, Russ is still skilled, but he also relies so heavily on his athleticism that I think there was some legitimate concern. How would recovering from COVID-19 affect his body? Would he come back in? Would he look a little bit gassed? Would he look out of shape? But largely, no. This is still the exact same explosive, you know, athletic, monstrously talented Russell Westbrook that we've seen. He had a slightly less efficient night than we would have liked to see out of him, but he also only played one half. I tend to feel like that in the games that we've seen Russ, at least since he turned into, you know, quote-unquote efficient Russ, I feel like there have been some games where he starts off a little bit slower and then really starts to pick up in the third and fourth quarters, honestly. And so I'm not going to hold it against him that, you know, in just one half of basketball where he played a total of, what was it, 15 minutes, you know, that would equate to, you know, even less minutes average than a usual, you know, half of basketball for him in a regular season game, you know, where the quarters are 12 minutes instead of 10 minutes apiece. So I just think that overall, Russ played a really solid game. He looked good. He looked healthy. And that's the biggest takeaway, right? Is, you know, in this game, Russ looked healthy. No Rockets were injured. You know, I those are the two key takeaways, is that you don't want to come out of a scrimmage game, an exhibition game, with any injuries. And you just hope that your players look healthy going into the game and that nobody's, you know, harboring any injuries or nobody looks, you know, out of shape or anything to that effect. And nobody looked that way to me in this one. Now on to the bearded maestro, James Harden. Harden looked phenomenal. I mean, he had a really stellar evening. He had 24 points in just 25 minutes. Only 6 of 15 from the floor, but 3 of 7 from downtown, so that's pretty, that's a pretty solid number for him. Pretty, you know, slightly less efficient night than what we'd like out of him. 9 of 10 from the charity stripe, though. Had 10 assists. He was wheeling and dealing like crazy. You know, only, how many turnovers do you have? Just 4 turnovers. Not terrible evening over there as far as, you know, controlling the ball, 2.5 to 1 assist to turnover ratio, I should say. So pretty solid night from him, a plus 11. And just, I think that one thing that we did notice out of Harden is there was a point where he did look a little gassed. He got knocked down and was on the floor for a minute. And there was some concerns on social media that he might have hurt himself. I didn't quite share them. I didn't see that. It just kind of seemed like he just wanted to catch his breath there for a minute. So Harden might be, you know, a little bit, I don't want to say out of shape because that's not the word, but for any of these players that haven't been playing, you know, legitimate full-on 5-on-5 ball for 4 months, you know, regardless of how great you kept your body in shape, you hear so many NBA trainers and coaches talking about there's no replacement for 5-on-5 full-speed NBA basketball. And this was, you know, this was an exhibition game. This wasn't even, you know, full-speed NBA basketball. It didn't have quite the feel that a preseason game does, where sometimes the players kind of mail those in. There was a bit more of a sense of urgency in this one, where they were legitimately playing the game and there wasn't really, you know, a lot of plays taken off or anything like that, or starters only playing half the game, with the exception of Westbrook, right as I find myself saying that. But, you know, I'm thinking of legitimate preseason games. Anyways, Harden had a phenomenal evening and looks, you know, to be in pretty great basketball shape. Maybe a little bit winded there throughout about that halfway point of the game, but I think after a few game, you know, actual game reps, he'll be where he needs to be. And I think one issue, right, is worrying about the rust standpoint from Harden, because you look back at some of his previous seasons and he's had a tendency, with the exception of this past season where he went, you know, he hit the turbo nuclear button from the start. you know, previous years, he started off seasons a little bit slower, and there might have been a bit of a concern that he would come back into the bubble and kind of have a slow start as he kind of ramps up and gets better and better as the season moves along, like he normally does throughout a regular NBA season. But, you know, him coming back in, dropping 24 points, had some, you know, nice step-back three-pointers in this one, had some flashy handles, had some great passes, not worried about James Harden at all. On to the final guy I want to talk about in this segment is one Robert Covington, who, first off, Robert picked up 5 early fouls and had to sit out the start of the third quarter just after halftime because he picked up the 5 early fouls in, you know, the first half of play. And, you know, some of them were kind of ticky-tack fouls, and, you know, I guess that's kind of to be expected, guys being a little bit more, you know, physical than they probably should have been, you know, first game back, just trying to get back into the swing of things. But overall, past the phantom fouls that were called on Robert, you know, they were probably legitimate fouls, but either way, you know, past the five quick fouls on him, overall, his defense was just, again, it's such a pleasure to watch that man play defense because he's constantly active. He's constantly reading what the opposing team is doing, trying to make the right plays, whether it's as a help defender or coming over from the weak side of the ball to, you know, help contest a drive, or just his quick rotations between defenders, the quick switches that he makes. And, you know, there were a couple possessions where he was, you know, I don't want to say taken advantage of in the post, but where maybe a Raptors player got the better of him in the post. But there were also some times where just down on the low block or just outside, you know, outside of the restricted area, he was able to kind of hold his own against Siakam or against, Siakam or Ibaka. There we go. Specifically just where he's able to, you know, so much body control to be able to stay in front of that post player as they're trying to make like a quick spin to the baseline or trying to, you know, dribble the ball around and try to find a quick crossover to get into the paint to drive the ball in. And there were a few possessions too where he kind of got his hand on the ball and, you know, disrupted a pass or was able to force the offensive player to pick up their dribble and then, you know, kick the ball all the way back out to the 3-point line. So I just wanted to highlight again his defense, and I guess that kind of goes hand in hand with PJ Tucker, who, again, they're the defensive anchors of this team. And the defense, you know, having 2+ defenders, 2 elite defenders like that on the court for the majority of the game, it does wonders for this defense, and it does kind of counteract the fact that at times Russ and Harden aren't exactly plus defenders and at times can even be negative defenders. So you need to surround those guys with, you know, really positive defensive players, and that's exactly what PJ Tucker and Robert Covington do. We saw a lot of that tonight. We saw them, you know, disrupting passes, getting their hands in passing lanes, locking down guys individually. And I just wanted to highlight that and give a bit of a shout out to Rocco, because sometimes we focus really heavily on the offensive side of the basketball and not so much defensively. So from an individual defensive standpoint, it really felt like those two guys were holding their own. From a grander team standpoint, the transition defense was a bit suspect at times, and with certain lineups out there on the court, namely when there was only, say, 1 of Robert or PJ Tucker out there, there were times like, you know, Jeff Green, Ben McLemore, you know, struggling defensively, you know, getting burnt by other players, or just the rotations not being as crisp as they are when those guys are on the court, when the starting lineup is out there, because I feel like that starting lineup just has a better overall chemistry and is better able to communicate about how those switches need to take place and just has less breakdowns overall than when you start going to the bench units. So coming up, I do want to talk about the rotations and just kind of what I'm still expecting moving forward when a full roster is available. So we'll get there in just one moment. And we are back in here, final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So I mentioned it tail end of that segment, but the transition defense is an area that, and this is an area that I've, you know, when I've gone back to rewatch some film and rewatch some highlights, after Ali Kambijani kind of explained how transition defense needs to work specifically for the Houston Rockets, that it's the responsibility of whoever's sitting in the corners on the Rockets offense. Whoever's sitting in those corners, it's up to those people to sprint back, but not sprint back directly to the opposite corners of the court, but to sprint back and for one, if not both of those guys, to sprint towards the middle of the court in kind of a V-shaped pattern to then pick up whoever the ball handler is for the opposing team to stop the transition play. And there were so many times in this game that I did not see that happen. There were way too many times where I watched specifically as a shot was missed by the Rockets. You know, somebody drives in and, you know, Westbrook drives in, misses a layup, or somebody, you know, Harden takes a three-pointer and it, you know, clanks off the back iron, whatever. There's a miss, and the corner guys aren't immediately sprinting back, or they are, but they're not the ones that are stopping the ball in transition. And I think that's such an important area when it comes to transition defense, is somebody has to pick up whoever has the ball, right? If you're letting an opposing player who is dribbling the ball up the court just have free reign, and they're allowed to dribble it all the way into the three-point line or the free throw line or all the way into the paint, you're going to give up some shots, because then all that has to happen is other players for the opposing team, in this case the Raptors, all they have to do is fill the slots on the left and the right and run with the ball handler, and then they cut into the basket at the last second. And it's hard to defend that if you're not going to pick up the ball handler. You have to stop the ball in transition to be able to prevent easy transition baskets. And some of them were just, you know, some of the fast break points for the Raptors were just kick ahead passes and some 2-on-1 breakdowns where, you know, there was a turnover by the Rockets and the Raptors just realized, you know, got the ball, secured it, and kicked it ahead for an easy fast break opportunity. Those are different. I'm just talking about the transition opportunities where the Rockets do have a chance to either stop the ball or get their defense set, because when the Rockets have their defense set in the half court, they're a pretty good defensive team. They're a top 10, if not, I think it was top 8, top 7 defensive team in the half court when they're able to get their defense actually set. And I'm going off of memory on that one, so maybe don't quote me on that. I should have probably had it pulled up before I started recording. Anyways, they are a good defensive half court team. Their issues have been and continue to be in the transition, because they give up so many opportunities there. But past that, there were also some miscommunications here and there for some easy buckets. And the Raptors did have, you know, Pascal Siakam had a pretty solid game. Serge Ibaka had a really good game. And, you know, those are two guys with some length and some size that are able to kind of play over the top of the Rockets. And there were multiple possessions where either Siakam or Serge Ibaka just used their size against, you know, maybe a switch or something like that, or just posting up a smaller player. You know, Pascal was able to drive the ball in a few different times and just shoot right over the top of the defense. And at that point, all you can do is give a good contest and hope that they miss, because when you're, 6'10 Pascal Siakam with, you know, crazy long wingspan and able to just shoot over the top of a smaller player like, you know, Eric Gordon or Daniel House Jr. or even Robert Covington, who has one of the longest wingspans on the Rockets at 7'2", you know, it's hard to contest Siakam, who's just a lot taller than that. So that's why at times, you know, the Rockets, you know, quote unquote small ball is concerning, just because when you do go up against, you know, the longer, taller players of the league, at some point it's just, okay, the player was able to get the shot off because they're bigger. You know, how do you stop Pascal Siakam? You kind of can't. There's not really anybody to stop him on the Rockets. You can contest and you can try to make his life a little bit harder, but, you know, at the end of the day, he's just able to shoot over the top. That's why you look at guys like Kevin Durant, who are, you know, essentially unicorns, or Kristaps Porzingis, who have such soft touches at their, you know, insane height that they're able to just shoot over defenders most of the time. It's really hard to contest those types of shots. But past the uncontestable shots, a lot of it was just, you know, some transition defensive issues, but I don't want to harp too much on it because it is the first scrimmage back and there were a lot of positives that we saw. Jeff Green looked great offensively in certain stretches. I want to highlight the fact that, you know, throughout much of the regular season before the trading of Clint Capella, especially with how prominent the double teams have been on James Harden throughout the season, we saw a lot of double teams on James Harden where then Clint Capella would be the secondary facilitator on any given offensive possession, where Harden would just throw the ball over the top of the two defenders, over the top of the double team to Clint Capella as he's rolling to the basket. And then it was Clint's job to decide from there who he wanted to kick the ball out to on the three-point line, because it was either, okay, if somebody's going to pick up Clint, then that means somebody is wide open out there on the three-point line. So all Clint had to do was make the right read and kick it out to the right shooter. shooter, and he, you know, that was his role in a lot of the offensive possessions where James Harden was getting double teamed. Now that role falls on PJ Tucker as he rolls to the basket, and Jeff Green. Whenever they set screens for Harden, if they set the screen and then roll towards the basket, then if the second defender stays with Harden, then all that person has to do is make the right read and kick the ball out. And Jeff Green did that a couple times this evening. He had a couple great reads to corner threes. It might have actually been to Daniel House both times. Actually, I take that back. The first one was to PJ Tucker, and then there was one to Daniel House later on. So it was just two assists from Jeff Green, so a very small sample. But personally, I like Jeff Green's ability to execute that part of the offense more than, say, Clint Capella, or even more so than PJ Tucker, for that matter, because Jeff Green is also a guy who can easily, you know, if the defense decides not to pick him up or they're late rotating to pick him up, he's a guy who can finish directly at the rim, you know, without much issue. So I do like him kind of in that niche role, you know, setting screens for Harden and then rolling in towards into the paint and then being able to make that read as the secondary facilitator. And then to highlight another guy, you know, Daniel House Jr., really strong game. He made a really strong case for why he should be the starter over Eric Gordon. Now, Mike D'Antoni did say post-game that Eric Gordon will be the starter moving forward for the Houston Rockets at the small forward spot. He will be the starter, you know, going into the eight seeding games. And whether or not that's a mistake remains to be seen. I don't necessarily think it's a mistake per se, but I've made this argument before, and this is my reasoning for why Eric Gordon should come off the bench and not be a starter, is that Eric is one of the few players on this team that is comfortable, and maybe I should put air quotes on around comfortable, just because we do see the Eric Gordon special at least once per game where he dribbles the ball off his foot or, you know, mishandles a dribble and gets stripped onto the way to the basket. He's not a phenomenal ball handler, but he's a great driver. Like, Eric Gordon is great at, you know, when he's out on the perimeter and he is able to either get the pump fake in and then drive to the basket, or maybe just, you know, get that quick first step in and drive past a defender on the way to the hoop. And he's a phenomenal finisher in traffic and through contact. So I think when you have your three finishers on the court all at the same time in Russ, Harden, and Gordon, you're kind of wasting some staggered minutes, because then down the line, it's just, I don't know, it bothers me because it feels like you should kind of space those threats out a little bit more. But that being said, with Austin Rivers coming off the bench as your, I guess at this point, your sixth man, whenever he does return to the team from his outside the bubble family emergency, that's probably why MDA feels like he can get away with starting Eric Gordon, is that you still have Austin Rivers to probably check in for Russell Westbrook at roughly the 6 minute mark of the first quarter, if that's how he wants to do the rotations, or if he's still planning to bring Daniel House Jr. in at the 6 minute mark. A lot of that remains to be seen because we didn't see Austin Rivers in this game. So it's still unclear how the rotations will look moving forward. But that being said, this new starting lineup is a lineup that we have very limited sample size for as far as, you know, five-man lineup data. Now, we do have some pretty solid sample sizes of the lineup that consists of James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Daniel House Jr., Robert Covington, and PJ Tucker. That five-man lineup has a pretty solid net rating, and I floated the picture around on social media right before the game, but you know, just that lineup does have some data that backs it up that it is a very good lineup, and I remain a little bit concerned about Eric Gordon. If he can't get his three ball to continue going, then that's going to be problematic. Now, he's one of the guys who did kind of struggle this game. Eric Gordon, just 2 of 8 from downtown for 25%. Again, Ben McLemore, just 1 of 7 from downtown for 14%. Jeff Green was 0 of 2, and Chris Clemens was 0 of 5. Past that, oh, and then Westbrook 0 of 3. But past that, the other guys on the team, the actual, you know, shooters on the team, Daniel House Jr. 50%, James Harden 43%, Tucker 43%, and Covington 66%. You know, those guys did their job, probably didn't get the volume of usual threes up that we would like out of some of those guys. I'd like to see Covington get his 3-point attempts up quite a bit more, but overall kind of a nice spread of threes around everybody. Probably want to see a few less attempts out of, you know, ideal, you know, Clemens wouldn't be playing in a regular season game. If Austin Rivers had played tonight, I feel like he would have absorbed all of the minutes from Chris Clemens and probably a majority of the minutes from Ben McLemore, hopefully. Now, moving forward, I do hope that we'll get to see some Damari Carroll. I'm really high on him. I think that he can provide a lot of help defensively. And I hope that the hamstring tweak isn't too serious, all things considered. You know, it's it's really worrisome thinking about, you know, soft tissue injuries when you come back off of a long break. That's always a concern heading back into the regular season after the off season is, you know, how quickly do you ramp up the practices and the play and then the preseason? How hard do you go and how quickly do you go? Because you don't want a player getting injured in a meaningless exhibition game, or in this case, a meaningless scrimmage game before the restart of the season. So I think that's where I'll leave things off for. Again, very excited to have actual Rockets basketball to talk about moving forward. The Rockets do have their very next scrimmage happening Sunday against the Memphis Grizzlies. So we will have that recap up for you Monday morning or Sunday night. I think that's going to be something I'm going to try doing moving forward, is I'm going to try to be getting these podcasts out in the evening as opposed to in the morning. That remains to be seen, but that's something I want to attempt to do. So all things being said, I'm excited that Rockets basketball is back. I'm sure that you're excited as well, and I can't wait to continue discussing it now that we actually have some real live Rockets basketball to discuss. And, you know, it's not just hypotheticals and throwbacks and all the hiatus content. Even though it's been some fun hiatus content, I'm just happy that we have legitimate Rockets basketball back, and, you know, it's infectious. I'm excited, and I am now repeating myself consistently at the end of this podcast, which means it is a sign for me to sign off. So for today's episode, that's where we're going to do it. As always, thank you so much for tuning in, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.